I'm a member of the Central Al-Anon group in Greensboro, North Carolina, and it is the best group in the world. And my name is Sue Pegg. Hi.
Hi.
And I am glad to be in West Virginia, I think. I would like to thank the committee for inviting us to this beautiful spot. I thought I was never going to make it to West Virginia, and I sure am glad I finally did. And to such a beautiful spot, and with such beautiful people, it's just wonderful. I'm kind of sorry that it's conference time, because, you know, you've had such good public relations. I had gotten used to those telephone calls and those nice little notes from Allison. Now they ain't going to come no more. And I'm going to miss it. Says all around me in the back of the room, on the program, and everywhere, insanity to serenity. And that's the first thing I thought. And I thought, well, you know, tonight's insanity, and from now on it's going to be serenity, I hope. Anyway, I'm going to try to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I'm an only child, the daughter of what I know now was an alcoholic. I brought many character defects into my marriage. For a long time, I didn't know that, but Al-Anon taught me that. And I'm going to put on my glasses so I can... Y'all have seen how good I look without them. Now I'll put them on so I can see how good you look to me. Al-Anon has taught me so much about myself, and that's what I'm going to try to talk about. There's a little thing that I heard that I keep in the front of my ODAT book, and I don't know where I heard it, but somehow that put everything in focus for me. Life is because you are, not because something must be. And all of my life, I went around with the attitude that something must be the way that I wanted it to be. This is just one of the few character defects that I brought into my marriage. Through the grace of God and the fellowship of Al-Anon, I have been privileged, as few others have. I've had the opportunity to share in the fellowship for over half of my life. Next February, I will have been in Al-Anon 27 years. The same group, the same meeting, the same night, and I've missed very few meetings. Now, after listening to me talk, you may not think I've come very far, but let me tell you, I know that I have. I am no longer part of the problem. I know now that I'm part of the answer, and that's a real good feeling. And it's because I've had the privilege of belonging to the Fellowship of Al-Anon. Long before it came into being, we had a group which was called an auxiliary. And this was very, very important. This is where all these Al-Anon groups started, is from little groups just like ours that really didn't know what they were doing, but somehow they were doing something about something that was bothering so many people. As I told you, I am an only child. Willard and I were married. Willard rolled around on a bar stool when I was 16 years old, and I knew that I had met the man that I was in love with and the man that I was going to marry. The fact that he told me that he had been drunk for 3 days, I thought he was so good looking. And when he told me he'd been drunk 3 days, I thought, God, he's a man of the world. Now, this is what I've been looking for all of my life. This is it. You got it made. When I look back on my life, I realize that this man was very honest with me the first time I saw it. But I looked at things dishonestly. I put them in the focus in which I wanted them to be. And this was the pattern that my life was to follow for many years, even a long time after I came into Al-Anon. I'd like to tell you just briefly, I want to talk about the program, but I do want to tell you just briefly how we made it into the fellowship, because I think that's very important. It was important to me to hear how people make it here, because many times I can identify. As I told you, the day that I met Willard, he told me he had been drunk for 3 days. Okay, we were married for almost 10 years before he made it to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, there were many things that happened during that 10 years. And those of you who have lived with the problem of alcoholism, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I found myself in the position caught up in the illness of alcoholism. I could not live with Willard, and I could not live without him. And I think that best expresses for me the disease of alcoholism, the family disease of alcoholism. The fact that we get caught up in this thing and we don't really know which way to go or which way to turn. Willard got drunk at me, I thought, and he joined the Marine Corps. This is just to briefly tell you how insane I had become. He was gone overseas he was in the Marine Corps. He was gone for 2 years, but he was overseas for a year. I had never known this man sober. He was coming home. I had had letters from him, and it took me many years, and I went back up in the attic and I reread these letters, and sure enough, he had written to me for about 6 months, and every time he'd write, he'd say, "I am still in the sack drunk. So-and-so brought me this or that." And I thought, if I can just get him home, he'll never drink again. And I'm sure all of you know exactly what I'm talking about. He did call me. He was back in the States, and he was coming home. And I was going down to the eastern part of North Carolina to meet him. And I was so excited, just like we were all excited when we've been away from our spouses for a while. He was never going to drink anymore. This is all I could think about in the car. Our lives were going to be different. I lived the rest of my life in that car going after this man this day. I made all the plans for our future. At this time, we had one child. And I made the plans that we were to have another child. I built our house, I educated our children, and I did all the things that you do as I went travel down the road to pick up Willard. Before I went out to the base to pick him up, I went by the liquor store and bought a fifth of liquor for a welcoming home gift to him. And I thought about this a lot, and I think it was really the fact that I didn't know if I could face Willard without him being under the influence of alcohol, because I had never known him when he was not. When I think about it, that's a very frightening experience, because you see, that made me know, it makes me know, just how insecure I was. And I'd like to say right here that anything I say is my own opinion. And also that anything that has happened to me, or anything that I know that God has done for me in my life, I can only see it in retrospect. I don't really think that we can see these things as they're happening. And that's why what has happened to me in my life, I don't want to ever forget. Because you see, I draw on that every day of my life. Willard came home from the Marine Corps, and this was in 1946. We had the son that I had planned to have, and he didn't live, and I blamed it on Willard's alcoholism. I blamed everything that ever happened on Willard's drinking. I was obsessed with a bottle of alcohol, the bottle of beveraged alcohol. It came between me and everything that I ever did. It came between me and my family at the table. It came between us when we went somewhere. It was there regardless of what we were thinking about or what we were doing. I was thinking about beveraged alcohol. It motivated everything that I did. If we planned to go to a football game, immediately I could see a bottle of booze sitting between Willard and me. If Willard wasn't drinking, I was sitting back thinking, when was he going to get drunk? I could never enjoy one moment of his sobriety, and I can't stand here and tell you that he stayed drunk all the time, because he did not. But I did, because I was so obsessed with the idea of when he was going to drink again that I could not in any way enjoy any moment of my life. I used to sit on the front porch, and I hated people. I spent a great deal of time just hating people. I don't know whether there's anybody else out there or not, but there's one thing I used to despise, and that's people in an automobile riding down the street with a bunch of kids in the back and all of them licking ice cream cones. I hated these people. I thought, if I could ever have a car, if I could ever have a husband, and we, on Sunday afternoon, go down the street licking ice cream cones, that would be heaven. You think West Virginia's heaven? That's what I thought was heaven. If that could ever happen to me, then I would really have it made. So I hated these people, and I truly know now that I did hate them, because I was so jealous of not having these things. And I think it's been my experience with the people that I've talked to that I'm not by myself with these emotions, that all of us have felt these things from time to time. But maybe because I was such a loner and I lived within myself and my family was very limited, that I held a lot of these things inside, and I just sat back and hated and resented. And I did this for a long time after we came into the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. I thought, this is just wonderful. Willard came to Alcoholics Anonymous. We were not speaking when he came to AA. He dressed and went out the door one night. This is what I like to talk about, real frustration. He dressed and went out the door one night, and I wasn't speaking, so I couldn't ask him where he was going. And when he came back at 10 o'clock and he still had his clothes on and he was sober, I couldn't ask him where he'd been. And this nearly killed me, but thank God, here again, God stepped into my life, because the next day, my first sponsor in Al-Anon called me. And she said, "Sue, I was so delighted to see Willard last night. I wonder if you'd like to go to the meeting tonight." And I didn't know what this lady was talking about. And I couldn't ask Willard because I wasn't speaking. So I said, "Reen, let me call you back." Because this was a lady that I had known all of my life and I had a lot of respect for. So I said, "Let me call you back." And I tried very hard to get Willard to say something to me, but you know how we are. If they ain't speaking and we ain't speaking, we sure ain't going to speak first. But finally, in passing, I said, "Willard, do you want me to go to that meeting?" And he said, "I'd like very much for you to." Willard went to Alcoholics Anonymous on a Tuesday night, and I went to Al-Anon on Wednesday night. And I'm truly grateful, because, you see, we have had the opportunity to share in many wonderful things since then. At the beginning, and for many years, I drug Willard down to the front row of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I listened very intently on what the speaker had to say, and I watched Willard's movements, and I watched his eyes, and I hoped that he was listening to what the speaker had to say. And I would turn around and I would glare at him if I didn't think he got the message. And I used to try to ask people what each speaker of Alcoholics Anonymous talked about, because that's the meeting that I wanted to get Willard to, because those were the things that he needed to hear. And I would go and I would sit and I would listen and hope and pray that those people would say something that Willard needed to hear, because I wanted to keep him sober so badly. And I thought that if I went and if I listened for him, then surely to God he would stay sober, because I had tried everything except listening to speakers for him, and it hadn't worked, and I was sure that this would. And I remember so vividly the first night I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know whether anybody else has ever felt this way or not, but I was so down and so out and so grasping at everything. I guess I was just a total nothing. But I remember the man, and he's now deceased, and his name was Charlie Watson. And this was the meeting on Friday night after I had gone to my meeting on Wednesday night, and Willard had gone on Tuesday night. And we had one semi open meeting in Greensboro at that time, and it was on Friday night. And I remember walking in that room and walking up those steps, and I saw that man sitting behind that desk in the back of the room, and I thought he was God. Because, you see, I knew that he was going to fix all the things in my life that had always hurt me so bad. And I sat in awe, because I thought that Willard's sobriety depended on me and this man behind the desk. We had a large desk, and that's where the chairman of the AA meeting sat at that time. And I'll never forget the feeling that I had. And I bet you there's some Al-Anon sitting out there tonight that their husband sponsor almost looked like God to them the first time they saw him. This is exactly the way this man looked to me that night. And from there on out, I knew that I was home. Willard drank after we came into the fellowship, but you know, I never felt alone anymore. I felt frustrated, and I felt that I was not getting the program for Willard the way that I should, and that he was not listening to me the way that he should. But never again did I feel that lonely, lonely feeling in the pit of my stomach. Somehow or other, I knew, after going to my first Al-Anon meeting and after going to that meeting on Friday night, I knew that we were home. And it never occurred to me. I thought back over it, but never, never did it occur to me that we would not go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. Always I knew that regardless of what happened, that we would go back. And I think that this really helped me more than it. This is the one thing that I hung on to. When I first went into Al-Anon, I remember I cried that Wednesday night. I went in and I saw about three or four women that I knew, and there were probably 15 or 20 there that night. And I sat down and I just bawled. But there was one sitting on either side of me, and they put their arms around me and they told me that was okay to go ahead and cry. They said, you'll never have to be alone anymore. That was the only message that I got. And I just love that. I love those women putting their arms around me and telling me that they love me. That was so important to me. And when Willard told me that we were going to the meeting on Friday night, I couldn't wait, because I knew that I was going to see those women again. And that maybe somehow again they were going to tell me that they loved me. And it had been a long time since I had been anywhere and anyone had told me that they loved me. So this was very special to me. And I like to think, when that new girl comes in that door of Al-Anon, I don't like to walk up to her and say, let me tell you, the first thing you do now is you take step one, because your life is unmanageable. I can't do that. And thank God, I don't want to do that. The first thing I want to do when that guy or gal walks through that door is put my arms around them and tell them that I love them and that I care for them, and that's all they need to hear the first time they go to a meeting. I think the literature is wonderful. We didn't have any literature when I went to Al-Anon. All we had was the two chapters in the big book, the chapter to the wives and the family afterwards, and I memorized both of them, but I'm here tonight to tell you that I didn't know the contents or the practical application of either one. But I thought I'd look real brilliant and real smart if I memorized everything that was in there and could quote it. I might have looked real smart to everybody else, but I was real miserable inside. So I feel that the thing that I can give the most when that new guy or gal walks through that door is for me to tell them that I love them and that they're home. And for God's sakes, to come on back, because I see you got a thing back there somewhere. It says, try Al-Anon for 90 days, and I think that's a wonderful recommendation. I guarantee you, if you try Al-Anon for 90 days, you're going to try it for 90 years if you've got a chance, and I believe that. I found out many things in Al-Anon in the beginning, but they sort of went over the top of my head because I was still working on my primary problem, my real purpose in being in Al-Anon, and that was Willard. And I darn near worked myself to death. I truly did. And if you're new out there tonight and you haven't been around the program too long and you're working real hard on your spouse, whether it's a guy or a gal, it don't make no difference. But for God's sakes, don't waste your time, because it sure don't work. When I finally was able to shut up and listen, and they made a big to-do over me when I first went into Al-Anon because I was so young. I was 25 years old, and at that particular time, they hadn't seen too many people that age going into Al-Anon. And as I said, they showed me a lot of love and a lot of affection, and all at once I became a professional Al-Anon. And I went out and I ran around and I talked. And I used to go to the public library because we didn't have a lot of books, and I'd write the best programs you've ever seen. And somebody would call me up and they'd say, Sue, will you come and give a program? And I'd say, sure. What would you like for me to give it on? Would you like my program on love, faith, courage? You know, I had one for all occasions. And I researched these programs, and I worked very hard on them, and I memorized them. But they were not my message. They were someone else's message. Because, you see, I didn't have a message. I just, at that particular time, was not afraid to get on my feet. And so I did this for about 9 years in Al-Anon. And one night I heard Willard get up, and Willard started talking about God. And this was a man that, I'll tell you about my first spiritual experience in the fellowship, and you'll kind of know what I'm trying to say. As I look back, I believe my first spiritual experience, and it may sound rather stupid to some of you, but yet there's some who may know exactly what I'm talking about. When Willard and I stood up that first Friday night and I heard this man beside me say the Lord's Prayer, I was astounded. Because, you see, I had lived with him almost 10 years and I didn't know that he knew the Lord's Prayer. So as I look back, I know that that was my first spiritual experience in this fellowship, because I shall never forget how I felt that night. I was to feel a real feeling of inadequacy about 9 or 10 years later. When I heard this man begin to talk about God, and I was a person who felt that I was far superior, particularly in the spiritual realm, than he, because of the kind of life we had lived. I had been one of those very good persons when he had given me the opportunity. And this is the way I felt about it. When he was gone, I would go to church, and I would take our child to church. But when he was home, it was not convenient, and I had something to blame it on. I could blame it on his drinking and the fact that he didn't go with me. So therefore, somewhere along the way, even though I was in the fellowship of Al-Anon, or I claimed to be, I was not really in. I was in the door, but I was not. I was not really in the fellowship of Al-Anon. I was to find just how far away from God I had finally pushed God away from me. I sat down in my group for 10 years, and I did not even give a program because I realized that I needed to listen. And this was one of the best things that could have ever happened to me in my life, because I became willing to listen for the first time in my life, not just the first time in my married life, because I didn't listen when I was a child. I was able to remember things and retain them and memorize them. And when I went to Sunday school, I remember that I learned the books of the Bible and the Beatitudes and the Ten Commandments. And every Sunday, the teacher would say, who knows the 23rd Psalm? And guess whose hand went up? Or who knows the Beatitudes? And guess whose hand went up? And I got another gold star. And this is all I wanted, was a pat on the back. And I was getting pats on the back when I first went into Al-Anon. So I wasn't really listening. But when I sat back these 10 years and I began to work at group level and I began to do the things that I wanted to do within my group and I began to make 12-step calls and I began to get interested in other people, my life began to change. When I became less interested in the fact that I could or could not control Willard's drinking, my whole life changed. When I finally made the decision that Willard's life was out of my control, then I became a more peaceful human being inside. I know that probably Willard's sitting out there tonight and he's probably thinking, well, you know, she still tries to control a lot of areas, but I can tell you, I used to try to control all areas. And I don't know that it bothered him, but I know now that it bothered me, and that's the important thing. Someone said sometime, I heard, and everything that I know or everything that I feel or everything that I am, I have heard or learned here in this fellowship, that I am no longer an angry person, but I have a right to be angry. And this I was very glad to know, because you see, for such a long time I also tried to be a very passive person. And this was not good for me either. This did not give me a good feeling. Now I become very angry when I hear people in Al-Anon say, let him do his thing and I'll do my thing. Because people are doing his thing and my thing right out of their marriages. And let me tell you something, I think this is a positive program. And I think that this program will help you stabilize your relationship with your spouse, with your fellow man, and with the God of your understanding. And I think that's what it's designed for. I was doing my thing and Willard was doing his thing a long time before we ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous or Al-Anon. And I didn't like it. And I get so angry when I see people come in and say, well, let him do his thing, and I'm going to do my thing. And by God, everybody I know is getting a divorce. And, you know, I just don't think that's what this program is all about. This is a very positive program. This gives us a way of life. This gives us an opportunity to mold our lives into something that we have never had the opportunity to do before. This can give us a good relationship with our children. This can give us a good relationship with our fellow man. This is giving me, I don't have to stand here and hate you all tonight because you look happy and because you look contented and because you're smiling. I can stand up here and love you because this program is positive and it's taught me how to love. And my God, if I can love you, you know, and you can love me, That's what this is all about. And that came about in my life through this program of Al-Anon. So I do get angry sometimes when we look at this in a negative, when we look negative, when we use the program in a negative manner. Of course, all marriages are not made in heaven, and we all know that. And all relationships are not made in heaven. And sometimes you have to do what you have to do if you want the results. And so I guess it really depends on what kind of results you want. But I do think that the program can be a very positive thing, and many times it can bring back relationships that are far superior to what they have been before. I used to think that Willard was to blame for everything, but somehow I was responsible for his drinking. Many times, even now, I think, well, it's really his fault, but I'm probably responsible for the way that he feels. But I know that that's not true when I really look at it, because you have taught me that it's not, that that's not true. That I am responsible only for myself and to the fellowship of Al-Anon. And what are my responsibilities as far as the fellowship of Al-Anon are concerned? I don't really know. But you know what? I think that the most fun that I ever have is each day finding out what those new responsibilities are. And each day those responsibilities change, and they changed a great deal for me in the last few months. Because things in my home are not really what they used to be, and this is not in relationship to Willard and me. My mother is sick. Now, I'm having a terrible time accepting the fact that my mother is sick. And maybe the way that she looks at things is not necessarily the way that I would like her to look at them. Here again, this represents, and I thought this afternoon when I was in my room, I was reading a little bit, and I thought, yeah, you know, really, this is your attitude towards this, Sue. You can be concerned, sure, but this is a new challenge, and this is what the program means when God, they say that God puts before us what we have to do, and that always behind these things that God puts before us to do, something good comes out of it. This to me is a new challenge, and this is something that I'm working on right now. And this is not easy. This is not easy. But this is a new personal thing with me, and I'm working very hard on it. The marvelous thing to me is the fact that after 10 years of not doing very much except listening and working in service work and working in my group, it was amazing to realize that I was still teachable. And you know, I am still teachable today. And this is so important to me, because there was a time, and you may go through periods like this, I don't know, but I do every once in a while, when I think, oh, well, I'm really too old to learn that, and I'm getting along all right, so I'll just forget it. But then when a new challenge comes along and we have to learn something new, to find out that my brain will still work, that I still can read and I still can retain something that I read, and that I can sit back and I can listen and I can remember some of the things that you say that helped me. This is wonderful because, you know, I am still teachable. And this program has given me the opportunity to become and remain teachable. Because when I first came, I was not teachable. I was not teachable because I didn't listen. I enjoyed your love and I enjoyed your fellowship. I enjoyed your companionship. I enjoyed the meetings and I enjoyed the socials. But as far as working the program for myself, I found that this just was not necessary for me. And I heard lots of people in our group say, oh, I'll not go to Al-Anon because I'm getting along okay on his AA. And I almost didn't go back to Al-Anon myself on two or three occasions because I let personalities come before principles. And that got me in a lot of trouble, too. And any time I do that, I get in trouble. And I thought, well, Willard's getting along pretty good in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I'll just not go back to Al-Anon. I'll just go to open AA meetings. But then somehow God provided me with the motivation to take me back to Al-Anon. And thank God he did. Because I look at those ladies now at home who were not going to Al-Anon when I first went in, whose husbands have been sober maybe 30 years, and they have no program. And I talked to someone the other day who has been in Alcoholics Anonymous for a long, long time. And he's a very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he came up to me and he said, you know, I wish my wife would go to Al-Anon. And I said, well, I wish she would too. He says, you know, she has no program. She has no program. He said, for a long, long time, she went to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous with me. And she sat with me week after week. And he said, I didn't encourage her to go to Al-Anon because we were getting along okay. He said, but you know, we had this crisis in our life. And he said it was a tremendous crisis, and it was because it was the death of their son. And he says, you know, we woke up one day, and I had my program. He said, but she didn't have her program. And he said, I realized the mistake that I had made when I didn't invite or insist on her going to Al-Anon. He said, it's been a long time now, and she's coming out of it. And I've come out of it real good, he said. Because, he said, you see, I had my program, but she didn't have hers. And I'm so grateful tonight that I have my program. Because none of us know what lies in store for us. But I know, as good as I'm standing here tonight, that there's one thing that I have that nobody in God's green earth can take away from me. And that's my program of Al-Anon. I have that. That's my very own. And I've worked for it. And for me to stand here and say, oh, well, I'm not doing so good. I'm doing great. And for me to stand here and tell you there's not much improvement, but I intend to get better, that's not so. There's a lot of improvement. I intend to get better every day. But there's been a heck of a lot of improvement in me. And I am improving every day. And this is my program. And there's one thing that nobody can ever take away from me, and that is my program. Regardless of what happens between Willard and me, or regardless of what happens in my life, as long as I live, I've got my program of Al-Anon. And nobody can ever take it away. And I hope, as long as I live, that I am an active member of Al-Anon, because I sure intend to be. You're not going to run me off. And those of you who have not been in Al-Anon long, I hope you have the opportunity to be in Al-Anon, and you'll take advantage of being in Al-Anon the rest of your life. Because, you see, I do feel that I'm very fortunate, as I told you in the beginning, to have had the opportunity to share in this fellowship as many years as I have. It doesn't make me know any more, and it doesn't make me any better Al-Anon or any greater Al-Anon or any more of an authority on Al-Anon than anybody else. It just gives me a few more years experience and a lot more years of age. But I'm just grateful that I've got my own program. And nobody. And I think that's so important. You see these people, their husbands get drunk and they quit coming to Al-Anon. Something happens to one of their spouses, they quit coming to Al-Anon. They get a divorce, they quit coming to Al-Anon. They get mad, they quit coming to Al-Anon. My God, how can you quit coming to a way of life? This is something that I just don't understand, because it's too much a part of me. I want to thank the committee again for asking me. I want to tell you how great it is, again, being in this beautiful spot. It's a real joy having an opportunity to tell you just a little bit about what to me is the best story in the world, because it's mine. Thank you.